traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hi, everyone. My name is Matthew DeSantis.
And I'm Kaylee Shapiro.
And welcome to this very special Naira Betts video on the road to the 2025 Kentucky Derby and Kentucky Oaks. The Breeders' Cup is over, but the road to the Run for the Roses is just getting started. This weekend at Churchill Downs, we have two Kentucky Oaks, Kentucky Derby prep races, the Golden Rod for the fillies, the Kentucky Jockey Club for the boys. It's going to be a lot of fun. Kaylee, I know, like I said, the Breeders' Cup is over, but this is an exciting time of year because we're getting ready for 2025 and all of those great races leading up to the Oaks and Derby.
Absolutely. I think this is probably my favorite time of the year. You can get a head start, start making your list of these horses that you have your eye on. Obviously, a lot of things can change between now and the Derby, but it's really exciting, especially the Stars of Tomorrow Day. A lot of great horses have come out of these days, like Anna, Rachel, Mandaloon, Super Saver. So a bunch of horses that have made a lot of noise on the road to or in the Kentucky Derby and the Oaks. So.
Absolutely. No, couldn't agree more. And just 3 years ago, it's so interesting. You know, up here in New York last year, obviously, we had the Remsen, and that ended up being a really key race for really that whole three-year-old crop with Dornock, with Sierra Leone, with Domestic Product, all running in that race, all becoming grade one winners. You know, a few years ago, though, they had a great group down in the Kentucky Jockey Club with Smile Happy, Classic Causeway, and White Abario. And all of whom went on to win multiple graded stakes races after that. And so, you know, you never know. Sometimes these fields really come up strong. And like you said, sometimes the biggest stars aren't even on these races, because we were just talking before we got started. Mystic Dan was on this card essentially last year, but just on the undercard. So you never know who you're going to see in terms of that future star and a future Kentucky Derby or Kentucky Oaks superstar. So very exciting field. Listen, before we get into it, make sure to press that like button and subscribe here to Naira Betts YouTube. We are going to have you covered for the Kentucky Oaks and the Kentucky Derby for the next several months. Kaylee is going to take the lead and do a lot of cool stuff with the Kentucky Oaks and getting you ready for all those great three-year-old fillies next year. I'm going to kind of take the lead on a lot of the Kentucky Derby stuff. We're going to come together and do a lot of joint collaboration, so it's going to be a lot of fun. Make sure to press that like and subscribe button today. Remember, subscribing is completely free of cost, just notifies you when new videos drop on the channel, and we got a lot from race previews, full card analyses, handicapping and betting tutorials, and so much more. And we got a couple of special ideas coming up next week for the Remsen as well. So, listen, let's talk a little bit about these fields though, Kaylee, and let's start with the Grade 2 Golden Rod going a mile and a 16th on the main track for those two-year-old fillies. It's a field of seven. We don't have the morning line yet as of recording, but it looks to be pretty obvious that a horse like Good Cheer for Brad Cox is going to be your morning line favorite. Certainly is going to take a lot of money. Interested in kind of what your thoughts were on this race. I know you and I saw a horse like Quiet Side in person up in Saratoga. A lot of different, you know, interesting horses, I think, in this field.
Absolutely. I agree. I think Good Cheer is probably going to be your morning line favorite and going to take a lot of money as well. Perfect three for three, two of them at this distance. So this horse is really strong coming in here. And not to mention those wins were very dominant as well. So I can understand a horse like this, especially Brad Cox, being your favorite, even the number one as well. But yeah, my thoughts on this race, I viewed this as the perfect opportunity with those two horses taking some money to go towards a filly that I've always loved, Quiet Side. I think that this race is going to be the one for her to get back into the winner's circle. Last time out in the Alcibiades, she had a bit of a difficult trip. She was running against, you know, Immersive, Quick Kick. So I think, you know, not that this is, there's no Immersive in here. Good Cheer is a really good horse, but I don't think there's going to be many horses fighting to get the lead with Quiet Side here. And even if, you know, she sits off the pace, I think she can work out a really nice trip here. The Alcibiades, you know, I think the public is going to look at that and probably view her as a bet against. I think she had a ton of trouble in there. I don't view it like that at all. And yeah, I've liked a lot everything I've seen from this horse. So
yeah, I hear you. And I think people to that point are also going to look at the jockey change, right? Mm-hmm. Luis Saez riding both Quiet Side and Good Cheer previously opts to ride Good Cheer in this spot. Tyler Gaffleone now up on Quiet Side. I think sometimes people will follow the jockey potentially to try to see where they like, you know, which of the horses in the field, certainly a jockey prefers to ride. But I agree with you about Quiet Side. That's a good horse that can run a few different ways. I mean, broke its maiden coming from off the pace very impressively up at Saratoga. And like I said, you and I were there for that spin away. And for people who don't remember, that was a nasty day of weather. It wasn't just a wet track, because that's where I think sometimes the racing program doesn't do it justice. Yes, it was a wet track, but it was a really nasty day. It was just rain was coming down sideways. It was a little windy. It was just not a fun day. And everybody was trying to stay undercover until literally the second before the gates opened up. And so it was one of those days where she ran really well. She kind of put away the competition that was around her. And then ultimately, you mentioned Immersive, who, of course, she lost to next time out as well in the Alcibiades. But Immersive was the one who came from off the pace to get the win in that spin away. Immersive, of course, is your Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies champion. So, you know, and Quick Kick, who you mentioned as well, comes back to run third in that Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly. So she's not disgraced at all by finishing third to those two in particular. And you know, Good Cheer, very impressive. I don't know exactly who she's beaten. I mean, I like a horse like Cherbini, who finished third to her last time out in the Rags to Riches, but it's not been necessarily a murderer's row of horses that she's gone up against. So I think I'm with you on this idea that maybe she's a little bit of a play against, and I sometimes can be skeptical when I see a horse winning by that easy of a margin. What happens suddenly when another horse looks you in the eye, and what suddenly happens when you get really tested down the stretch in a way that you never have before? We'll have to see, but I agree with you that's going to take a ton of money and opens up the opportunity for a horse like Quiet Side, maybe 7-2, 4-1, 5-1, maybe even in terms of a price.
Exactly. And also the day of the Alcibiades, there was a really strong speed bias on the track that day. And she was dealing with a lot of horses like Liam in the Dust, who has a ton of early speed. Might not be a horse that finishes strong all the time, but definitely, you know, was a big pace presence in that race, as well as Rich City Girl, Immersive, and then sitting right next to Quick Kick and also taking a ton of kickback with the trouble. So I think coming back here, you know, I'd be really comfortable taking this horse at a price. Like, I mean, I can't say, because I might take her at a lower price than a lot of other people will. But yeah, I really like this filly. I think, you know, this is the race for her to get back into the winner's circle. And like you said about Good Cheer, she has not been facing, you know, the Immersives of the world. Immersive is the top filly. So yeah.
Right. No, I couldn't agree more. Now, in terms of a little bit of a price, I do think it's funny, before we started recording, we were kind of comparing notes and just kind of seeing where, you know, what horses we each wanted to talk about. We both thought a horse like Sturgeon Moon could be at least an interesting horse to use underneath in this spot for Paolo Lobo. Paolo Lobo is, oh, by the way, just winning 46% of his entries at Churchill Downs so far this meet. So maybe you want to bet on Paolo Lobo a little bit. By the way, heating up just in time for Turfway Park. If you don't know anything about that, just flat betting Paolo Lobo over the last 5 years at Turfway Park actually has a positive ROI. It's absolutely wild. So that is a trainer that you can absolutely rely on in these types of spots. And this is a horse that's gotten progressively faster every single time out. Broke her maiden at Horseshoe Indy. Then Lobo runs her against the boys in an N2L allowance at Horseshoe Indy. She finishes second against a group of boys. And then last time out comes from off the pace. And more importantly, look at the fractions of that race at Keeneland. They were going slow. They were going 49-1, 114-3, and she still closed from off the pace that day. Granted, there might have been a little bit of a bias that day, but still, you close when coming from off of that slow of a fraction. I think that's really noteworthy. She's a horse that we don't know if she's gotten that upside yet. Sired by Instagram, who is a first crop sire, not necessarily known for getting them ready first time out. We've not seen that type of success, but they keep getting better and they're doing well going longer. I think that one could be an interesting price. And same sire as a horse like Key Waden for Chad Brown, who we might very well see run next week in the Remsen.
Exactly. Like we said, I think, you know, we kind of view this as a three horse race with the two Brad Coxes and the and quiet side. So, I mean, using a horse like that underneath at a price is definitely, I think, a way to go. Just one more thing I wanted to mention about quiet side. It's important to note that, you know, she targeted this race. She didn't go to the Breeders' Cup. So I view that as another positive. I think, you know, a little bit of time off, not like it was too much time at the same time. You know, that may serve her really well here.
Absolutely. And I mean, you and I were around some of the connections of Quiet Side before that spinaway. There was a lot of confidence in this filly. I mean, they have a very high hopes for her. So it's always good to see when the connections are that confident in the filly as well. And like you said, very intentionally pointed to this particular spot. So I think absolutely is a good opportunity to try to play against the favorite. Well, let's head to the boys' version of the races. The Kentucky Jockey Club, of course, won last year by Honor Marie. It wouldn't be a video if we didn't mention Honor Marie as last year's winner. Instant Coffee the year before that. Smile Happy the year before that. So some familiar names on the Derby trail that come out of this race and end up going on to do, you know, more work later. You saw a horse like Red Route One, if I'm not mistaken, a few years ago, coming out of this race as well. So this is another one, a mile and 16th, 4 2-year-old boys on the dirt. And 10-horse field, everybody, though, is going to look right at Jonathan's Way. That's the big name in this field. Won so impressively second time out at Churchill Downs. Coming off of a little bit of a disappointing effort in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, wheeling back on about 4 weeks rest, basically. But, Kaylee, you were reading a lot of stuff, a lot of quotes from Phil Bauer, who indicated this horse is ready to go.
Yeah, so obviously I know it's never, you know, super smart to play a horse that just came out of the Breeders' Cup, and I normally would not go that way. But if you're looking at this race on paper, just for what it is, this is the best horse in the race. So, you know, immediately I thought, you know, maybe I'll play against because he's coming out of the Breeders' Cup. And then I saw his bullet work, and then I was like, wait, this is kind of interesting. So yeah, I read some quotes that they weren't even planning on running him here, that they got back home, and you know, he had so much energy just, you know, being hand walked and jogged, that they were like, all right, let's got to put this horse back to work. So I mean, to hear that is pretty positive. And also, you know, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, that to me, that the whole pace fell apart, obviously, when East Avenue had a really troubled start, unfortunately. Yeah. So, and they were saying how, you know, the Breeders' Cup might have been a little bit overwhelming for Jonathan's Way while he was there, Phil Bauer said in the article. So I think it says something to come back home and then immediately to start training as well as he is, and to just display so much energy and wanting to run after, you know, having a bit of an overwhelming experience. I think that this horse might be brushing this off a little bit. And also the pace should be pretty fast in here. He's a horse that, you know, he can go a couple ways about it. You know, maybe a horse like this could get the lead. Maybe a horse like this can just sit right off of a couple other horses and that tire each other out and, you know, make a run up. But I think there's several ways that he can win here, and he's the best horse coming into this race. So
yeah, absolutely. And you're right. The Breeders' Cup Juvenile, that pace situation fell apart from a standpoint of, not that it fell apart in terms of how fast it was, it fell apart in terms of the dynamics, though, to your point, that once East Avenue didn't break, I mean, I was there that day, obviously, and I turned to somebody, Alex Henry, actually, who was just on last week on the channel previewing the Japan Cup with me. I turned to Alex and go, as the Citizen Bull and Gaming are going into the first turn, I go, they can stop the race now. This thing's over. Because it was two Bob Baffert horses on the lead controlling the pace, and nobody was going to pass anybody. And it just turned into Del Mar, basically, just a merry-go-round. So, I think that's a race that, looking back, I can see that being a race 6 months from now. We look back and draw a line through that Breeders' Cup Juvenile in a lot of ways for horses like East Avenue, for Chancellor McPatrick, for Jonathan's Way, where you go, listen, just a fluky race. You know, something happened at the start, just changed the whole dynamics. I know my dad's got a conspiracy that they opened the gates too soon. Shout out to my dad, but and his conspiracy theories. But like, I think there's a lot going on there. And Jonathan's way, you can't ignore the bullet. I mean, this horse clearly is ready to run.
Absolutely. And I wasn't even ever like a huge fan of Jonathan's Way. Like, so I'm being completely objective here. So I just looked at it and I was like, you know, he's the best horse in this race. And like you said, they even mentioned East Avenue in the article saying that, you know, I think they were really confused looking around, like, where's East Avenue? Like, this is just not the way it was supposed to play out. Right. So, I mean, I think he's going to get the proper setup in here. So,
yeah. Well, let's talk about a couple of others, though, because I think there are some other interesting horses. You know, we mentioned a horse like Tiztastic, who's probably going to be your second choice, I would imagine, for Steve Asmussen, coming off a second place effort to a horse that I know you are very high on, Sovereignty, for Bill Mott. The last time out in the street sense, this one, like I said, ran second that day and just wasn't quite good enough for Sovereignty, who might end up being Mott's top Derby horse this coming year. And looks to be pointed towards some of the big races down at Gulfstream Park in all likelihood. So, you know, that's one would probably need to take a step forward from a buyer speed figure perspective, but certainly finishing second to Sovereignty and beating the rest of that group last time out speaks well to that horse, who has two dirt races and two turf races. So a little bit of an interesting muddied form to some extent to this point for Steve Asmussen.
Absolutely. Tiztastic was the other horse that I was interested in besides Jonathan's Way. I mean, he didn't have a difficult trip in the street sense, but I mean, and neither did Sovereignty. I mean, but I'm saying that Tiztastic, he bobbled at the start. He got bumped by a rival, just like minor things like that, that, you know, aren't necessarily a bad trip, but pretty detrimental to a two-year-old. So I looked at that as well. The horse displayed a lot of talent, and I think maybe you'll be able to get a little bit of a price on him as well. And if I were to pick an alternative to Jonathan's Way, which I'm not sure, I don't think I will. I mean, but I would go towards Tiztastic, but regardless, I'll definitely be using him in my wagers as well. Regardless.
Yeah. I got to give a shout out to a horse that when the field came out, you even texted me and said, oh, your boy Dapper Moon's in this race. I do love me some Dapper Moon for Dallas Stewart. I have a hard time picking this horse in this spot after fading to fourth behind Sovereignty and Tiztastic and Sandman, although finished basically a neck and a head apart behind him. That said, I do think, you know, just to cover this race objectively and from kind of a journalistic standpoint, there is some question about whether or not Ricardo Santana Jr.'s availability is in the air due to legal issues. So that is something to at least pay attention to see if there is a potential rider change on Saturday in this race. And this is one who ran really, really well at Saratoga to break its maiden, but kind of also got the perfect trip that day, beat a horse like Guns Loaded, who we might very well see next week in the Remsen, but then kind of came back and finished a distant fourth to East Avenue and Ferocious and Filoso, who's another interesting runner in this race, and has kind of leveled out from a buyer speed figure perspective the last two times out. You know, it does have a nice work leading up to this race, but I think if you're looking at Dapper Moon, I would say more of strictly of an underneath. And then the other one, obviously, Filoso, an interesting horse, but I feel like is also maybe a little up against it from a pace standpoint. It's going to be coming from well off the pace. And is a horse that's got a thrilling running style in that regard, but you do worry whether or not he gives himself too much work to do coming for home. Maybe reminds me a little bit of a horse I mentioned earlier, Red Route One, who always made his run, but maybe didn't quite get there at the end all the time and kind of needed a perfect situation. Now, if there's a lot of pace and it melts down, maybe he's got the right setup, but he's one more, I think, underneath for trainer Chad Summers.
Absolutely. And then, yeah, Filoso, I mean, out of the two that you just mentioned underneath that price, based on what Dapper Moon has showed me versus what Filoso has shown me, I'm probably going to play with a Filoso maybe underneath. Yeah. But both of them are really good options. You're probably going to get a really good price on them. So, yeah, I definitely agree. Another horse that I was super interested in that I think you're going to get a pretty decent price on is the Kenny McPeak horse, Render Judgment. He broke his maiden on the Stars of Tomorrow, the first day, the day of the street sense, in the last race. And I was there and I took a really good look at him. And he was running against this horse, American Promise, that I think is super impressive and probably is going to mature, you know, probably after, you know, he's just getting there right now after like his fourth start or fifth start. But he, you know, he chased down that horse in an impressive way. He had a smart trip for a 2-year-old. Like, he showed a lot of professionalism. You know, they were able to save ground. But then when it was time to angle out and get in that spot to finish up, he didn't have a spot. So then he had to, you know, go around this. Like, he just displayed a lot of professionalism if you watch the replay. So that's a horse that's definitely piquing my interest at a price. And also a stat about Kenny McPeak with 2-year-old third time starters routing on the dirt. He's winning 22% of the time with a $2.62 ROI. So, you know, his 2-year-olds, they tend to run better, you know, second time out, and then even better third time out. So I thought that was another positive about this horse as well.
Yeah, Kenny third time out is always really good. Third off the layoff, third career start. You know, he's a trainer. He's an old school trainer. You know, a guy like Lucas, a guy like McPeak, Shug McGahey, they'll tell you a race is worth 3 workouts. And rather than just working a horse out forever, they'll get him into a race and get a race under their belt. And a lot of times that first race back is not meant to be a winner. Second race, okay, maybe a little bit more of a shot. By the third race, we're really ready to roll. So I think First Resort, Render Judgment, I should say, is absolutely going to be a price. The other horse that I'll mention that I was a little bit high on that's a price is the Josie Carroll horse. He's Not Joking, coming down from Woodbine. Now, the question is, how does this horse take to the dirt? Admittedly, that's a legitimate question to ask, and we won't know until Saturday. But the horse's pedigree would suggest he should be able to handle the dirt. You know, out of a Central Banker mare and sired by Practical Joke, plenty of dirt pedigree there. So I'm not really worried about that. Josie Carroll usually does a nice job getting her horses ready coming down from Woodbine for these types of spots. And I think it's notable that this horse really perked up from a buyer speed figure standpoint when this horse stretched out last time doing 2 turns for the first time in that Gray Stakes at Woodbine. I think this one, again, maybe more of an underneath play, would need to get a little bit faster. But I think because the horse is coming down from Woodbine, trying a surface for the first time, the horse is going to get overlooked, I think, a little bit. And so as a result, you could see that horse floating up a little bit. And I think could be profitable using underneath in your exactas, your trifectas sort of a thing. So, like I said, I think it's an interesting field. If you're going back to what you said, listen, if you think Jonathan Way is the best horse, then and there's plenty of evidence to suggest that he is, then he's probably a single in this race and you move on to the next one. If you want to play against him from the Breeders' Cup angle, which is an angle you and I talk about, and, you know, I tend to maybe lean into a little bit more in terms of just fading horses coming out of the Breeders' Cup, especially on relatively short rest. You know, if that's the case, then you got to toss him. You can't really include him because in my opinion, there's not a clear second choice. Tiztastic's nice, but he's not that much better than Floso. He's not that much better than Dapper Moon. He's not that much better than maybe a horse like Render Judgment. So if you're tossing, you know, if you're trying to get past Jonathan's Way, then including him and 3 or 4 other horses is not necessarily a profitable way to build a ticket. So just a couple of things to keep in mind for folks who are building out those late pick 5 tickets at Churchill on Saturday. But this one should be fun, Kaylee. We're getting ready for the Kentucky Derby. This would be a lot of fun.
Absolutely super exciting. And also the part of it, like Jonathan's Way, he's the best horse on paper coming into this, but like, they're 2-year-olds, so it's just super exciting to see, like, you know, how it can change. Like, that's why I'm super interested in a horse like Render Judgment that, you know, ran a 78 buyer when he broke his maiden. I mean, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, if he's going to take another step up now in his third start, I think that could put him in a place where, you know, if not, definitely a horse that I think can hit the board. That's why it's exciting.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the same thing you could say with Filoso, a horse that has just, you know, 61 to 76 to 80. It just keeps getting faster every time out. Where is that ceiling? We don't know yet. They're two-year-olds. Your point. I mean, you've been around horses more than I have in terms of just being around them on the farm, you know, around the track. You know, just a time can make a huge difference for a two-year-old. It's not as if it needs, you know, 6 months off the bench or something like that, and the horse comes back as a different animal. That goes without saying. But you can see huge differences from one race to the next, and it doesn't take a lot of time for these horses in some cases to really physically mature or sometimes mentally put it together and kind of figure out, that's what my job is. Got it. And just get a little bit more professional.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So going to be a lot of fun. Kaylee, thank you so much for joining me to talk through these two races together. It's going to be a fun Saturday. We'll be at Aqueduct for the Cumley. That'll be a lot of fun, obviously. But we'll be watching all the races on Churchill Downs on the TV. And we got a lot coming up next week for Cigar Mile and the Remsen. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. These next 2 weeks are very exciting. I'm really excited for the races coming up and all the Derby prep. So, yeah, it's going to be great. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, thank you all for really tuning in and watching this preview of the Goldenrod and the Kentucky Jockey Club as we get you ready for the road to the 2025 Kentucky Derby and Kentucky Oaks. For Kaylee Shapiro, my name is Matthew DeSantis, wishing you a great and prosperous day at the races, and reminding you, friends, it's now post time.
This morning, we had a couple of vans coming in early for Wayne Lucas, and he's preparing for the season at Saratoga, so he shipped in three vans this morning, three vans yesterday. He's filling up quickly. We've had also a few vans for Dale Roman who's coming up, to bring his big boy for the Travis. So hopefully we're going to be bringing more action throughout the day. It's easy. These guys come out of Churchill and they take a van ride for about 16 hours, try to make the horses comfortable in the van as the best we can and try to bring them here so they can compete, full throttle until September, whatever it is, 6th, 7th, whatever, Labor Day. But the idea is just to try to bring them here in good shape and not too tired so they can compete right away. That's what my job is all about, is to try to give them a good ride and try to give them the best service we can. And, just to make sure the horse is well taken care of at all times, that's all,
Okay.
Do not bear to the right, to the left. You go straight down. There will be a chute on your right inside. You'll see, what's his name, Price is over there.
Yeah, I know where a chute is right there on the right. That's before you go around the curve there.
Right.
There's a chute right there.
Right. All right. It's on the other side.
All right.
You just got to readjust once in a while. Sometimes you have a plan and you think it's going to work out great, but, something comes in the way and you just got to go around it and just make sure everything works out fine and that the horses are not being in distress or that nothing is going to go wrong for the horse. It's basically what it is. So we had to move chutes and we came to a closer chute to the barn and it all worked out fine. Horses happy in the stalls now and everything's fine.
We left Churchill Downs last night about 7:30 p.m., heading this way. We stop every four and a half hours to water the horses, make sure that everybody's in good spirits and not in any distress or anything like that. So adds a little bit to the trip, but it's one of those things that we do just to make sure the animals are taken care of.
I started when I was young, 13 years old back in France. I wanted to be a jockey, jockey's dream or whatever, and then I guess too much soup or too much water, I don't know, but I started growing too fast. But anyways, long story short, I ended up here in the United States. Work as an assistant trainer for about 15 years, and one day I just got given the opportunity to go work for a very reputable van company, and it's not something I plan on doing, but it's something that I'm doing, and I'm trying to do it the best I can.
We pride ourselves, on hiring horsemen that can drive trucks. We take hauling horses very seriously. It's important to us, so we try to hire the best people, and we have the best equipment, and It's a good situation.
So when 90% of our employees at Sally have horsemanship, 90% of them, unless they're working in the office. But the people that are actually working on the grounds and around the horses are horsemen. That's something that we take pride of. I think it's very important. You have to be able to adjust to situations like we talked about earlier. These are animals, if you don't know what to do around them, then it's going to be very difficult to do the right thing. You have to know this animal. I mean, these are 1,200-pound animals. There's no time to play around. When there is a situation, you have to be a horseman to know, what it is that you have to do to make yourself safe and not sorry, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. they're all different, you know. It's funny. They're very much like humans. You'll have the ones that are scared of everything. You'll have the one that, I think, phases whatsoever. You know, they can take a van ride, a plane ride, and it's not going to affect them whatsoever. But you have some others who, on the other hand, you know, just can't take the shipping as good. They get stressed out. It's a new environment. It's not their home, their own stall. It's a moving vehicle. It's moving vehicles around the moving vehicles. You know, so it can be very stressful for some of them. And we will see that some horses actually show signs of stress. You know, like 48 hours after a big shipment, for example, on a 24-hour shipment or whatever. There's been studies proven that after a 24-hour period, the horse can actually spike a fever and all that. All due to stress. It's all related to stress. So, like I said, my job. Try to keep him as stress-free as possible. That's the idea.
Why don't you, once you get on the tack off right here?
See, the thing in my ear is a really great help because I can multitask, you know what I mean? Obviously, I like to be hands-on, so you have to be able to communicate with the trainers when they, you know, when they want to tell you when they want to go and how they want to do it, so I have to be able to communicate with them. So I'd say a big part of my day is on the phone, a lot of time on the phone. But also you have to be able to be on the ground and socialize with everybody. So you have to try to get, you know, your trucks in early in the morning and try to get them out early in the morning because it's cooler. And then after that, you can organize yourself and go talk to the trainers and whatnot. So basically do your groundwork. And after that, it's just to try to keep everything organized for the shipment, you know, during the rest of the morning and basically, yeah, organizing. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
This is interesting because, as you've seen, it's always different. It's always changing. And a lot of guys that haul freight, you know, they bump docks, so to speak. They'll haul freight from one place to another place. They'll back into the dock. They'll offload them, load them, and there they go. What we do, it's different in that we get to deal with animals. We get to get out there and see, you know, really unique and beautiful places such as Saratoga Springs, New York. So it's ever-changing, and it's refreshing.
The one thing that I'm going to say is I am dedicated. The whole company is dedicated to the racehorse. And I firmly believe that if I can give the best service for the horse, the trainer is going to be happy, and that's the only way it goes. If the horse is happy, the trainer is happy, I'm happy. That's where my life, you know, that's where basically it revolves around. Just try to keep them happy. And but super agent, no, I just try to do the job that I'm asked to do the best I can. And like I said, with them in mind first, you know.
Good morning. It's what we've all been eagerly anticipating here in Lexington, the opening weekend of the spring meet at Keeneland. It's Saturday, April 3rd, and this is Keeneland Close Up. Good morning and welcome into Keeneland Close Up. I'm Kenny Rice here in the director's room at Keeneland, and certainly the anticipation building for this first Saturday of the Keeneland Spring Meet. And we know it's officially spring here in Central Kentucky, even though the calendar said it was 2 weeks ago, because Keeneland is in session. And what a race to open things up this weekend. It is the Central Bank Ashland Stakes. This Grade 1 features the top 3-year-old fillies in the country, a major stepping stone toward the Kentucky Oaks. And a little later, Mike Battaglia will join us, as always, to break down the field and give us his picks. But first, LEX18's Jackie Conjato takes a look at a company that is synonymous with world-class equine transportation. And yes, the clients are indeed world-class athletes. Jackie?
Thanks, Kenny. Well, each spring, people come from far and wide here to Keeneland, and so do the horses they come to watch. But before hooves can fly across the finish line, many need a pair of wings to get here. At Lexington's Bluegrass Airport,
hopefully everybody is here.
The prep process is in full swing for a high-profile arrival.
We check everybody that goes in and out. How you doing, buddy?
Security is tight. A plane full of world-class athletes is on its way.
Right now, we're just waiting for the plane to get here, and as soon as they do, we'll have lots of action.
Game time as the jet cruises in. The stars on this plane don't like to wait. They demand snappy, professional service.
You're not going to see LeBron James riding in coach class on Southwest. Same thing here.
You could call him the head steward on this flight. Mike Payne is his name. Flying horses is his game.
You can tell if someone's paying attention to you because when they ask you what you do for a living, and they say, well, I fly horses. And they're like, wow, what? Or they say, oh, well, that's nice, and they turn their head. Well, you can tell they didn't pay any attention to you. And then they'll come back and say, what did you say again? Or what did you say you did again?
He and his crew at Tech Sutton Forwarding Company have the routine down.
We're the largest carrier of horses by air in the United States.
Today's flight is full, 20 horses all the way from Ontario, California. 18 will race at Keeneland.
These horses basically went from Santa Anita and Hollywood Park to Keeneland and Churchill Downs in about a 6-hour window, stall to stall.
It's fast when compared to a 3-day drive, and included in the airfare is a complimentary in-flight snack.
Keeps them occupied. It's more of a pastime to munch on the hay.
The goal is to keep all passengers pacified.
Horses are never polite, so if you upset them, they immediately, they start whinnying and screaming and stomping their feet, and the whole airplane shakes.
Captain Eric Lund is well aware the cargo he's carrying can sometimes be worth 100 times the value of the plane itself.
You know, I've had as much as $250, $300 million worth of horses on a $3 million airplane.
That means it's his job to keep it boring.
The turbulence is bad enough or things are going to be too rough, we just send them back to the barn. Go a different day.
Hardy, Philly!
One by one, the trip down the ramp and directly into the trailer is fast and orderly.
We need this one over here and that one back there.
Because when one goes, his neighbors like to follow.
Because their buddy has gone, they think they need to go too.
That's not to say there isn't room for a little horsing around.
Yeah, we like to keep it fun, and there's a lot of camaraderie in it.
And after all the celebs are loaded in their limos and the plane is, well, serviced, this crew will load up and take to the skies again.
Today we're just moving horses. It's a barn with wings on it.
And even after the last race is run here, the need for equine air transport remains. The guys over at Tech Sutton tell us they fly horses 250 days a year. I'm Jackie Conjato for Keeneland Close Up.
The Keeneland September sale is a unique sale in that it has 4,500 horses that sell over approximately 2 weeks. And it's really unlike any sale in the world, and it requires kind of patience and viewing it like a marathon. My name is Jason Litt, and I'm with Solis Litt Bloodstock. I work with Alex Solis and Madison Scott, and we are out here at the Keeneland September sale hunting down some hopefully very fast horses.
First impressions essentially go a long way. If you're going to put it on a scale of 100 and a percentage, for me, that first impression is, I would have to say, right at about 60%. I am Nick Hines. Some of you may know me as the Sarge. I work as an analyst host at TVG as well as a bloodstock advisor at MyRacehorse.com. Denominator is trying to find that game changer, and within that game changer is trying to find value. Sometimes they don't end up being on the same page. In particular, when you're looking at book one, you know, breaking it up into two sessions, trying to find value and trying to find that game changer, it's a very difficult blend.
The Keeneland September sale is comprised of six books. Book one, you get the best physical types and you get the best pedigrees. It's a combination of both, but you're going to have to pay for it as well. Book two, you're still getting those really nice physical types, and you're also getting those nice pedigrees as well. And then when you get to book three to six, you get a little bit more bang for your buck.
The reality is trying to find a physical that can match up with a pedigree, but once that physical matches up with a highlighted pedigree, then you can do the math.
You can find a great horse from any book at the Keeneland September sale, even authentic. He came from book three.
This is a projection. Obviously, you're looking at pedigree, but you're also looking at the athlete, too. But a lot of people compare, like, looking at a high school basketball player. Is he going to become the next Michael Jordan, or is he not?
Hi, I'm Joe Mishak, Racing Operations Manager with MyRacehorse.
We started out discussing in the office, are people going to like this idea? People are going to want to participate with the MicroShare concept. And when people kind of latched onto it, we said, what can we do next to take it to the next level? We want to compete on the biggest stages. We need to partner with the best people in the industry.
Michael approached us about a year and a half ago. We set up a meeting with Mr. Hughes. He loved the concept. His feeling is that this is something that can be bigger than the NFL. I'm Ned Toffey, General Manager at Spendthrift Farm. When we are partnering on a horse, it's very important that both parties are happy with the individual. So Spendthrift has its own inspection team, and My Racehorse has its own inspection team.
There are a lot of people that will look at a catalog, mark out horses that they want to see, but we're really coming at this from the approach of any horse can be a runner, so we look at everything.
We separate out our team of three or four. We separate out into, 150 horses apiece. We take a look at them, pretty much every horse offered for sale. We inspect them. Again, it's what we call form and function.
But you kind of want to look at this like track and field, that the 100 and 200 meter dash, they have a different physical look than the 400 to 1500, and then the 1500 to 10,000 meters, they're all different. And then, of course, add in a different surface, they're really quite a variety of horses that exist, and then throw in new sires. So right now, you have a bunch of new sires that are coming in, Gunrunner, Arrogate. So they're a completely new look that we've never seen before.
When I'm evaluating horses, one of the most important things that I like to see is balance. When I look at balance, I'm sort of drawing a line at about the withers on the horse, and I want to look at how much horses to the right of that line and how much horses to the left of that line.
Do they have the makeup physically to what we think are going to withstand training? Are they, proportional from the front to the withers, their midsection, and then the back end? How do they move? How do they walk? If there is some, conformational traits, which obviously there always is, no horse is perfect, and if it is, you're going to pay a lot of money for it.
You like to see a reasonably correct horse. In other words, those limbs line up pretty well. When that horse walks at you, he comes at you rather than being towed out or towed in too much.
Obviously, by a book of standards, when you talk about horses being back at the knee, over at the knee, bench knee, offset, crooked, towing in, sickle hocked, out in the hocks, short back, there's so many sway back, there's so many different characteristics, but there are so many horses in that mix that you can contend with. When you talk about the dynamics of a racehorse that hits at 5,000 pounds per square inch, if a horse is back at the knee, just imagine sitting at a table and the table is a little crooked as far as the legs, and the more weight you put on top of that table, the chances are it won't withstand that.
Really, at the end of the day, you're looking for an animal that gives you that kind of tingly feeling in your stomach. And that's really so much of this. The beauty of the game is there's a science to it. And clearly, have a vet look at them and make sure they're sound. There are companies that will scan their hearts to see how their heart looks. There are companies that do a biometric analysis.
No horse is perfect. And so it's very important that we have a vet that works with us in pointing out all of the imperfections that we can live with. We like to see a good functioning throat on a horse, and your throats are difficult to evaluate. They can change dramatically in a short period of time. But understanding what you can live with and what you can't live with, and a good veterinarian is really key in that process. Same thing with evaluating the x-rays. These horses' ankles, knees, hocks, and stifles are all x-rayed. All those films are on file here for our veterinarians to examine.
But then there's also the art of this, and this isn't a science completely. There's a lot of feel, there's a lot of gut feeling, and there's a lot of looking at the animal and gauging, do you think this thing will fight for you? Because at the end of the day, we're looking for athletes, and you want a horse that's going to want to compete.
There are many things that could come up in a vet report. For example, Justify, I believe he sold here at Keeneland for $500,000. If he had a perfect vet report, you probably could have multiplied that by 4 easily.
When we determine a budget on a given individual, we're looking at the pedigree, the confirmation. We'll go back and we'll look at the sales averages for that sire, the sales history for the dam, and we'll use those numbers to come up with a price range.
At this point in time, the market is overcompensating for age of mares. It used to be people didn't worry about that, but now if you notice the prices, a lot of these young mares are having their offspring bring premium dollar because they're thinking that there's a plus in that. So we're looking at it from a standpoint of that might be a really good value play to get an older mare that's proven she can get it done.
Being a McDonald's All-American Band finalist, March is essentially what I know. So when I see a horse coming to the back ring, I'm looking for cadence. I'm looking for horses that don't break cadence. I'm looking for horses that are not rattled by the noise, nor bothered by the people that surround them, nor the other horses that are here. So what I see there needs to happen in this ring as far as not breaking cadence. And if they can march up there without breaking cadence, then I'm on to the next phase.
Once they get up there and get in the ring, you want to be aware of who else may be bidding on this horse. You've got a price in mind. We usually set a max number that we go in there with. And, you know, you want to make sure that you're going to get the best price that you can.
It is absolutely a poker match because the seller's job, from a consignor standpoint, is to identify the buyers, and that's going to dictate where they might put a reserve. So the last thing you want to do is let them know that you love this horse, because they might go to the owner and say, hey, so lease lit's on it. Those guys are willing to spend a lot of money. Let's bump the reserve. So there's a lot of jockeying and bluffing and faking people out. And there are enough bidding spots at Keeneland, you can really kind of hide it.
Feels a little bit like game day. You get a little excited, especially when you've got a really special horse coming into the ring. But you've got a job to do, and you want to make sure you go about it in the best way to get that horse and get it for the best price that you can. Oftentimes the bidding is, if it's moving very quickly, as a bidder you may want to try to slow it down a little bit. If the auctioneer sense too much enthusiasm, you may be prone to that price jumping up on you a little bit.
360 and I have in the back 360,000.
Nothing better than to try to fake someone out. You end up buying it and they come around and see you signing the ticket and think, oh man, we didn't know that was you guys.
When you sign a ticket throughout the process, it's equivalent to being in the winner's circle. There's no better feeling. It's an adrenaline rush, and the sky's the limit.
It is a great feeling for a moment. And then you realize you need to be right, because this is just the start. Buying the horse is essentially buying a lottery ticket. The amount of the lottery ticket is, you know, the hammer price, and everyone else in here recognizes that, wow, if it was a lot of money, that was a pretty good horse, but then they need to run. So it's great, but then you realize, oh geez, now it all starts.
I like telling people the why of our business. You know, the what's pretty simple. We're a feed mill. We manufacture horse feed. But it's the why we do it. It's not putting ingredients in a bag.
It's a humble privilege to be a part of some pretty great experiences and lives.
The customers that come and why they come and why they enjoy it is because we are genuine. And it's real. There's no pretense. Learned that well from Mr. Bob. If you can be a problem solver, you're very endeared to them, and goes a long way.
We're there to serve them, regardless of who calls. we're always there.
It's not too often you get a call that's, hey, everything's going great. I mean, we get those, but usually we get a call and it's, help me.
Yeah.
We celebrate their successes and we hug them and cry with them when they have disappointments.
I think it's even really special when you've seen the success of a horse that maybe had an issue. When something came up that they just needed our help and that we were able to help fix it for them. And those horses were able to go on to succeed, whether it be in the racing industry, whether it be in the Western disciplines or show jumpers, hunters, eventers, just knowing that we helped that horse have a future.
We clearly want to be our customers' go-to for nutritional information. We're not feeding generic livestock, we're feeding athletes. It's a process that begins really when the growing season for a particular crop begins that we're going to utilize in the plant the following year. We have a large number of people who work here in Lexington, almost the huge majority that have agricultural roots or ties. So it makes it easier for us, I think, to relate to the trials and tribulations and the highs and lows of horse ownership. So I think those combinations of people and personalities and backgrounds are critical to the success of our business. Our average tenure of employees across the company is about 15 years, which has been lowered significantly by some folks that we brought on in the last few years. And we've got all these younger, aggressively minded, challenged, positive people that just want to continue to embrace change and embrace the technologies that they find and bring to us to incorporate into the business. The direction we've taken over the last several years has been to become as technologically advanced as we can in terms of our facilities, in terms of our manufacturing processes. We are definitely an American dream. The company was founded by one of the last of the greatest generation. His mantra has always been, we have nothing to sell but
service. You can buy feed from anybody, but you got to give service of a quality product.
It's not just a bag of feed. Where we're located, the people on our team, the way in which we entertain and show hospitality, the pride that we put in a bag of feed in our plant, those are the things I take great pride in being different.
It's beyond just horse feed. It's a family.
Train them all the way back to here.
Yeah.
Come back here and straight back. It's like, what? Yeah. Nice hold the foot.
Lost two ones.
Tranquilo.
that half round?
I think it's Ferrier Products.
I tried to put that band right there.
Yeah, right on the switch.
We don't call those bends though, we just call them turn down.
Well, you'll love this. When they, they had it over the, you know, they're trying to classify bends and turn downs as two different things.
Right.
And, I didn't pay much attention to it. Opening day here on the overnight says absolutely no turn downs allowed. And we're thinking, my God, they just said we could have turn downs here at Churchill. So me and Mark Dewey go to the stewards and took that in there and said, we're kind of confused about what you're saying here. Absolutely no turndowns. He said, yeah, turndowns are illegal. Bends are not. And me and Mark are looking at each other like,
so bends are and turndowns. I mean, so I said, Mark, I told Mark, don't you fucking turn them down. You just bend them.
There you go. But it's the height.
Yeah.
Turn down is over a quarter, bend is. Word usage has really got the horseshoers befuddled. At least us two. That's funny.
they ran some horses and jar pots over at San Diego this year.
Is that right? Yeah. If they would really. People would sit down and really want to see the slide phase on a horse and I didn't know how important slide phase was until the Polycrack showed up. Yeah. Didn't have a clue. We all knew they slid because we could see the marks.
I'm gonna tell you what, when they don't slide, unbelievable.